Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from AntiWar.com. This is Anti-War News for Monday, March 4th, 2024. Right, so as you can tell, I'm sure my voice is a little shot. I was actually sick all weekend, but I felt much better today. I just kind of have this lingering throat thing. So I hope it's not too annoying, but I might be a little quick with the stories tonight. I just don't want to risk losing my voice. All right, so the first story at the top of antiwar.com today, Israel boycotts hostage deal talks in Cairo. So a Hamas delegation arrived in Cairo on Sunday for hostage deal talks, but Israel has boycotted the negotiations. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu broke off hostage deal talks because Hamas did not provide a list of all the living Israeli hostages. So Kyle Anzalone actually wrote this part up on Friday that Netanyahu told Qatar and Egypt, and they're mediating the talks between Israel and Hamas. He told them that there will be no more. Israel will not participate in the talks anymore until Hamas provides a full list of living Israeli hostages in Gaza. What was interesting is that Haaretz reported on Sunday that they cited sources in the Israeli security cabinet who criticized Netanyahu for making that demand, pretty much saying that it was not a necessary demand, kind of hinting that it was just made to sabotage the negotiations. One of those sources said, quote, "As with the previous deal, one could assume there would eventually be proper lists of the hostages and of those no longer living. This didn't need to be made into a deal breaker for advancing the negotiations," end quote. So the potential deal that's on the table is for Hamas to release about 40 Israeli hostages in exchange for a six-week ceasefire and the release of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Hamas has been seeking a permanent ceasefire and Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, but there were signs on Sunday that the Palestinian group may be more flexible on its demands. So a senior Hamas source told Al Mayadeen, which is a Lebanese-based outlet, their editorial line is very anti-Israel. And one of their Hamas sources said that they think a deal could be reached soon, despite obstacles being put in the way by Israel. The source said, quote, "Despite these obstacles, the possibility of reaching an agreement is still viable, especially as the occupation is being dealt heavy blows in Khan Yunis and Al Zaytun neighborhood," end quote. And I guess the Hamas official is talking about the fighting on the ground there. So citing Arab media, Haaretz also said that a Hamas source said the group could be flexible on the length of the ceasefire and the number of Palestinian prisoners that will be released. But both Hamas sources said that they are standing firm on two conditions, which is Israel allowing displaced Palestinians to return to northern Gaza and the delivery of much more aid into the north, where people are really starving. So while we see a little more flexibility potentially from Hamas, a deal is not going to happen unless, you know, Israel is participating in the negotiations. And it does seem like Netanyahu's trying to sabotage something here. So we'll see how this all plays out this week. All right, so the next one here, aid groups slam the U.S. for not pressuring Israel on aid. So over the weekend, the U.S., along with the Jordanian Air Force, airdropped aid into the Gaza Strip. That was on Saturday. And now aid groups and aid officials are criticizing the U.S. for doing that instead of pressuring Israel to let more trucks into the Gaza Strip. U.S. Central Command said that it dropped, that U.S. military planes dropped 38,000 meals in Gaza, which is a very small amount considering that there's 2.2 million people that live there. And the UN and other agencies are saying that the entire population is facing crisis levels of food insecurity. So one group that really criticized the U.S. was Oxfam, which is this international charity. And Oxfam said that the airdrops, quote, "mostly serve to relieve the guilty conscience of senior U.S. officials whose policies are contributing to the ongoing atrocities and famine in Gaza," end quote. Oxfam also called for the U.S. to end military aid to Israel. And there's also a guy named Dave Harden, who is a former official with USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, you know, which is in charge of giving out aid in a lot of places. And he said that the airdrops show that the U.S. government is weak for not putting more pressure on Israel. He said, quote, the airdrops are symbolic and designed in a way to appease the domestic base. Really, what needs to happen is more crossings and more trucks going in every day, end quote. So this is just the U.S. trying to say that they're doing something as all of these Palestinians are starving. And U.S. officials have acknowledged to Axios that the airdrops only have a limited impact since a U.S. military plane could only drop the equivalent of the amount of aid one or two of these trucks could carry. The UN has warned that at least 576,000 Palestinians in Gaza are facing catastrophic levels of deprivation and starvation, and a massive famine is expected if the situation on the ground does not significantly change. At least 15 Palestinian children have starved to death in Gaza just over the past few days, and that's from one hospital, the Al-Adwan Hospital. 15 children starved to death in the past few days. So that's how bad the situation is. And that's just the starvation that we're hearing about. I'm sure other people are dying of malnutrition and dehydration elsewhere, you know, outside of the hospitals, that isn't being recorded. All right. So the next one here, Israeli Minister Gantz arrives in the U.S. on a trip not approved by Netanyahu. So Benny Gantz, who's an Israeli war cabinet minister, he's a former defense minister, he arrived in the U.S. on Sunday on a trip that was not approved by Netanyahu, the prime minister. And apparently Netanyahu was very angry about this. According to Israeli media, Netanyahu was not aware of the trip until Gantz informed the prime minister of his plans on Friday in a tense phone call. A source told the Israeli news site Ynet that Netanyahu made it clear to Gantz that the state of Israel only has one prime minister. So Gantz is the leader of Israel's National Unity Party, which is an opposition party, and he became a member of the war cabinet on October 7th or right after October 7th. And he's scheduled to meet with Kamala Harris, the vice president, and also Blinken and Sullivan, and Brett McGurk, who's the top Middle East official in the National Security Council. So Netanyahu sees this as, you know, his main opposition going around his back to go be courted by the Biden administration, which has been critical of Netanyahu, but that hasn't translated into any policy changes. But so it was interesting. On Sunday, Kamala Harris was given a speech, and she called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, but then she quickly clarified that she meant a six-week truce, which is on the table as part of this potential hostage deal. So in this speech, she said, that's why there needs to be an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, and the crowd erupted in cheer. And then she said, for 6 weeks, you know, the deal that's on the table. So it's not really much of a change, but it seemed like to try to score some political points to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. So Gantz is there. Again, he got there on Sunday. He's going to meet with Kamala Harris on Monday, and I know he's going to meet with Blinken on Tuesday. And Gantz is kind of portrayed as the moderate opposition, but he's totally in support of the slaughter that's happening in Gaza. And he was the one that's threatened if there's no hostage deal by Ramadan, which starts on March 10th, which is a week away now. That means Israel will invade Rafah. So that was him that made that threat. All right. So the next one here, the U.S. vetoes the U.N. condemnation of Israel for the Flower Massacre. So this article is from Kyle Anzalone. The U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution condemning Israel for a massacre of civilians surrounding an aid convoy in Gaza, a motion supported by all other member states. So on Thursday, Kyle goes over the massacre known as the Flower Massacre now, where over 100 Palestinians were killed. Israeli forces opened fire at them, but Israel claimed most of the deaths were due to a stampede, you know, a crush that happened. But actually there was a doctor at the director of the nearby hospital that took in about 170 people who were wounded in this incident, said 80% of the injuries were the result of gunfire and the other 20% were the result of getting trampled or something like that. So Algeria was trying to put forward a UN resolution to condemn Israel for this massacre, and the U.S. blocked it. And all other members of the UN Security Council supported it, and that includes the UK and France. But here we have the U.S. using its power on the council yet again to cover Israel for the atrocities that it is committing in Gaza. Speaking of atrocities, this next story here, an Israeli airstrike in Rafah killed five-month-old twins. So this article's from AP, and it is a really sad story. It's about a Palestinian woman who for 10 years was trying to have a baby with her husband. They did in vitro fertilization, and she finally had a baby. She had twins 5 months ago. They were born, I think she said, you know, the day before the war started, the current conflict. And they were killed in an airstrike. She was in bed with her husband and the two twins, a boy and a girl, five-month-old babies. And everybody was killed except for the woman. So she lost her husband and two babies. And 11 other relatives were killed and 9 are missing under the rubble. And this was an Israeli airstrike on Saturday night in Rafah. Again, this place that is so packed with Palestinian civilians. So there's a video with this story that's really tough to watch. You see the woman telling the story about what happened, and you see the babies. You can kind of see them here. You see the dead babies, and you know this stuff is really tough to watch. But I think some of these anecdotes, because we hear these numbers, you know, I'm always talking about the thousands that are killed, but when you see the tragedy that's happening just in one person's life, you know, it makes it much more real. All right, so the next one here, Israeli media leaks recording of killed Gaza hostages. So if you remember a few months back, Israel killed 3 Israeli hostages in Gaza. They were trying to surrender, and they approached IDF soldiers with no shirts on, waving a white flag, and Israeli media published a recording of when they were killed. And you hear them in Hebrew saying, "Save us," and that we're hostages. And it's very clear that you could hear them. And then you hear gunfire, and then the recording is cut off. So this might put some more pressure on Netanyahu to reach a hostage deal, because we know that the families of the hostages want a deal. They don't want their family members to also be killed by Israeli forces inside Gaza. All right, so the next one here, British cargo ship sinks days after attack by the Houthis. So the Ruby Mar, which is a British-owned cargo ship that was hit by a Houthi missile on February 18th, has officially sank. And this was announced by the U.S. military on Saturday. They put a picture out of the ship going under the water. And so this is the first ship that's lost in this Houthi campaign in the Red Sea, in the Gulf of Aden, where they've been attacking ships. So a British cargo ship has sank. And, you know, in response to the news, the Houthis have vowed that they will sink more British ships. So Hussein El-Ezzi, the Houthis' deputy foreign minister, said, quote, "Yemen will continue to sink more British ships, and any repercussions or other damages will be added to Britain's bill, as it is a rogue state that attacks Yemen and partners with America in sponsoring the ongoing crime against civilians in Gaza," end quote. So this is just an example of how much things have just become a mess since the US and the UK started bombing the Houthis on January 12th. That's when the Houthis started targeting American and British commercial shipping. And it just continues to escalate, and they're not showing any sign of backing down. And I also mentioned on February 29th and March 1st, which was last Thursday and Friday, the US reported that it launched more missile strikes in Houthi-controlled Yemen. They're continuing, they keep bombing Yemen, and it's just not doing anything. All right, so the next one here, Israeli airstrike kills 7 Hezbollah members in southern Lebanon. So this article is from Jason Ditz. So Israel launched a series of airstrikes in southern Lebanon on Saturday, killing at least 7 Hezbollah members and badly damaging several buildings. And then it came out on Sunday, according to Arab media reports, that the grandson of Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, his grandson was apparently killed in an Israeli drone strike, in one of these strikes. So, you know, that could mean an escalation depending on how Nasrallah reacts to that. But this just situation continues to be very tense. In the last show, that story that I went over about the U.S. is expecting Israel to invade Lebanon if they don't reach some sort of deal with Hezbollah. And the more strikes, the more killings of their members and the leader's grandson. I mean, all this just makes a diplomatic solution less and less likely. All right, so the next one here, Israel launched more airstrikes in Syria, killing 3. This is another article from Jason. So this was on Friday. Israel destroyed a villa in the northwestern Syrian port city of Banias, killing 3 people. And one of the slain included an Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy member who was reportedly in Syria acting as one of the Iranian military advisors. So they killed another Iranian. And this is Israel trying to provoke Iran. I think it's very clear that that's what they're doing. They want the U.S. to directly intervene. Netanyahu wants this things to explode. So what he's doing in Gaza is not under so much scrutiny. A big regional war would benefit him. And this is, just another risk here, these airstrikes in Syria, as well as their airstrikes in Lebanon. All right, so the next one here, most Democrats want a candidate against aid to Israel. So this is interesting. There was a new poll from Reuters Ipsos last week that found the majority of Democratic voters prefer a presidential candidate who doesn't support military aid to Israel. Another sign that President Biden's unconditional support for the Israeli slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza could cost him in November. The poll shows that 56% of respondents who identified as Democrats were less likely to support a candidate who backs military aid, while 40% were more likely to support such a candidate. The results were more evenly split across the board, taking into account Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. It found 40% of American voters, of all voters, would be less likely to support a pro-Israel military aid candidate, while 47% were more likely to support such a candidate. And Republicans, the majority of them favor a candidate who wants to give military aid to Israel. 62% said that they do favor a pro-Israel candidate, and 34% said they would be less likely to support a candidate like that. So President Biden, of course, is expected to run against Trump. That seems to be inevitable if Biden can make it till November. And both of them are staunch Israel supporters. Obviously, we all know Biden is because of everything he's been doing. But Trump, was before Biden. He gave Israel everything that they wanted, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, the policy on settlements in the West Bank, recognizing Israeli, the annexation of Golan Heights, many things like that. There's no reason to think that Trump is going to be any better than Biden here. And Biden is facing a wave of criticism and protest from within the Democratic Party over his unconditional support for the Israeli massacre in Gaza. All right, so the next one here, Biden is taking extraordinary steps to prevent protests at events. So this is another one from Kyle. And this says that the Biden re-election campaign has taken several severe steps to curtail pro-Palestinian supporters from interrupting his speeches. The campaign has gone as far as keeping rallies small, avoiding colleges, and not informing the public of the location of events. Throughout most of January, the president was met with chants of Genocide Joe at least a dozen times. Pro-Palestinian protesters label the president Genocide Joe because of his unconditional support for what Israel's doing. And in response to these protests, the campaign hired Doug Landry to prevent further demonstrations. Landry has worked on planning and logistics for past presidential campaigns. They're making things smaller, avoiding colleges and things like that. So it's having a real impact on Biden's re-election campaign. All right, the last story in the news section here is Zelensky says the lack of military aid is unacceptable. Zelensky's not happy with the U.S. This is another one from Kyle. This one's at the Libertarian Institute. Zelensky criticized his Western supporters for not providing enough aid. What did he said? I'll just read his quote here. He said, quote, when lives are lost and partners are simply playing internal political games or disputes that limit our defense, it's impossible to understand. It's unacceptable, and it will be impossible to forget. The world will remember this, end quote. So, of course, he's not happy with the U.S. that he hasn't gotten the $61 billion in new aid that Biden wants Congress to pass to fuel this war for another year. So that's it for the news for today. I went kind of quick there. Go check out our viewpoints, one from James Carden, Patriot Games, The Ideologies of American Warmongers, one from Ted Galen Carpenter, NATO's Undeniably Corrupt Ukrainian Client, one from Alan McLeod, Worthy versus Unworthy Victims, Media Coverage of Navalny and Lyra, one from Ramsey Baroud, How Gaza Has Exposed the West Like Never Before, and one from Gideon Levy, Gaza's Night of Death and Hunger. So please go check all of that out. Go check out our blog. We have lots of good stuff in there. As always, there's a ton of stuff in the lower section of the page about what's going on in Gaza and other stuff in Israel and Palestine. Just so much stuff going on here. But that's it for me for today. I hope everyone had a good weekend. You can follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter. You can always support the show just by sharing it, telling your friends, commenting. I appreciate a lot of you who comment. Hopefully tomorrow my voice is sounding more normal. I hope that wasn't too annoying. But anyway, I will be back tomorrow with some more news. Oh, let me know what you think. We have a new logo in the intro and the outro, and I'm going to use it for some other things as well. So let me know what you think of that. But that's it. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.